This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, good morning, Charlie. Good morning, everyone.
And good morning to you, Franklin Proctor.
Well, here we are, Charlie Dobbin, on a Saturday, what is the 17th?
I like the way you say that.
Yeah,
we were just talking about.
Yeah, I know. We're hitting the mic switch there. Charlie and I were having a little conflab about the current situation with the pandemic and how we're both getting PO'd.
Yeah.
You know, really. I was just relating the fact that, you know, normally at this point in time, my gal Shirley would be looking forward to almost a month down in Florida. I would be able to arrange maybe 10 or 11 days because I didn't want to miss too many garden shows.
No, you know? I was going to say, can't do it without you.
But no, we can't do that anymore. No. And so,
but in a sense, maybe that's not such a bad thing. Going to Florida.
Yeah, I mean, really. Oh, no.
But even just, without the pandemic, you probably might not want to be there just now.
No,
really?
Right now, no.
Yeah, it's a different story.
It's one of frustration. There's not much to look forward to.
That's what I was just going to say. It's like we're caught in a syndrome of nothing to look forward to, and it feels a bit bleak, right? The days are getting shorter. And, you know, like a good example, I see my dad on Friday nights.
Yeah.
And since the kind of opening of things in midsummer, I started coming. We'd go out for dinner Friday night. And as the 416 or the Toronto restaurants shut down, we moved out to York Region, and
thank
now they're
much.
Shutting down. Sorry about that. and now they're shutting down. Yeah. So my dad's a bit sad. I won't be seeing him. And it's just one of those. And you haven't seen your grandkids, and you don't remember.
Yeah, they live right downtown Toronto, but you know.
Yeah, so you do a drive-by, and they go out on the balcony and you wave, right?
You know, we meet in the street sometimes, you know. Staying 10 feet apart, that sort of, and that's so hard with grandkids.
Exactly. Yeah. Man. So it's funny time. And it's, I think, but you know what? We're going to cheer everybody up.
That's exactly. We are
that's
the
our
cheerleaders.
but I'd like to really, let's emphasize great places to go, whether it's a local park or, you know, even a bit of a drive to something that is fun to do.
Yeah.
That is not, you know, gonna put you on an airplane. Like, let's keep it simple, stupid, but let's talk about, you know, anybody who has some suggestions in your neighborhood of fun places to go, we'd love to hear it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Which leads me to the phone numbers where this is
good
the call-in show for the garden show. Yeah. So here we go. Let's see. 416-360-0740 or the toll-free line. Open right across the province here, 1-866-740-4740. And do keep in mind that if you're a first-time caller, please let Carlos, our operator, know, and you'll hear that. You get your garden wings before you hit the airwaves.
Pretty special.
Yeah.
And we've still got some emails to address.
There
is still quite a pile in my inbox, so we're working away on them.
Okay. Very good, Charlie. Excellent. That about it for the moment?
Probably should do our first break.
We'll go to our first break.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Happy up. We're coming back. Yeah. Oh, there she is. Smiling, laughing, giggling. All right.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, that whole break was taken up with Charlie and I arguing about who paid last week for our luncheon across the street.
Arm wrestle to the end.
I find out that I am to pay today.
It's your turn, baby.
Wonderful. Okay.
Steak and eggs.
All righty, let's go to the phone lines here and say hi to Dawn calling in from Hamilton. Good morning, Dawn. Hi, Dawn.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yep, there you are.
You're on the air.
No, I'm Lorraine.
Oh, Lorraine. Ooh. Okay, good. I think we might. Who knows? Hi, Lorraine. Are you calling from Hamilton?
I have some creeping phlox on the north side of my driveway, but it's away from the. It gets morning sun over the roof, and it goes over a little retaining border.
Nice.
And it's growing into towards the, I thought it would grow southwards, but it's growing northwards, and it's covering up all my daffodils that are supposed to come up in the spring. And so I was wondering if I trimmed it all back, would that help?
Well, did it slow down the emergence of the daffodils last spring?
Yeah, they didn't come up.
Oh, they didn't?
There's one or two sort of poked through.
Huh. I'm surprised they didn't just push their way through that phlox.
Yes, that's right. That's what I was wondering.
I mean, it is an evergreen,
no,
and it's...
daffodils, I understood that daffodils aren't that attractive to squirrels, or am I mistaken?
No, that's correct. They are poisonous to squirrels.
Yeah, so I thought that, you know, maybe they should come up.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure they're still there. I mean, phlox, creeping phlox tends to be a fairly dense mat, like a carpet. And it could be that the daffodils, it was just cold and dark, and they just kind of went up, went, oh, it's all dark up there, and just gave up the ghost. If you want to trim, which you can do, shear and trim and do whatever you want, best time to do that is in the spring.
Okay.
Right after it flowers. So
right after the flowers?
After it flowers, exactly, because it's an early spring bloomer.
Right.
So, but what I would do is do your best. For this year, if you, what you could do for this year is, you know, remember pretty much where those daffodils are. Do a little trimming so that you're exposing where the daffodils are, and see if you can just help them emerge by exposing the bare earth to the sun, and see the daffodils being able to come up early in the spring.
So I could do that now.
Yeah, I'm do the minimal amount of trimming, but do what you have to do.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okie doke. You're very welcome. Thanks for calling. Yeah, so Frankie, Carlos just sent us a note and said he's having some technical issues with the software.
Oh, okay.
So we're not sure who's up next, but perhaps...
I believe it's John.
Oh, you think so?
And Markham, I think. Hi, John. Is that the...
Good morning, both of you.
Ah, there
good
we
morning.
Go. Okay.
I'm a dahlia lover. I love grown dahlias.
Mm-hmm.
So from back home, I guess. Mm-hmm. The only problem I find every year, question number one is, do you wait till the frost's passed, then you bring in the dahlias?
That's what I do.
That's somehow something to do, keeps get a better bulb?
Well, because physiologically, the dahlias are growing on a very large rhizome. And what happens is that they're growing and growing, and everything's peachy, and the sun is shining, and they're flowering, and we love them. And if we dig them up while they're still in that active state, of course, we're going to force them to go dormant when we dig them up. But it's a bit of a shock to the plant. Whereas if you let nature do the shock, like that wonderful frost that causes the leaves to just turn black overnight, that, again, forces that dormant period to start. But you're then in a good position to get in there with your digging fork, dig those dahlias up out of the ground, and lay them out on newspapers or wherever, you know, on a porch, in a garage, to let them dry down, because you want them to dry down for at least 4 or 5 days, and then gently remove whatever big clumps of soil are still stuck, and then away for the winter. But I just find I have my best success when I let nature take its course and let them go dormant because of the weather.
No question. Do we talk about after you got them in the garage, drive 4 or 5 days?
Mm-hmm.
Every year I lose so many tubers because I put them in peat moss in a cold room, but somehow I lose maybe 20-30% because they dry up. You could shrivel up and they're gone. Like beautiful tubers they were before.
Right. So that
ask you something. Something else told me that he puts them in soil with the stick, what he cut off, above the ground, and put them in cold storage in the garage. There's no frost. Is that possible?
Yeah, that can work. It's obviously frost-free is important, and some people's garages are not frost-free.
No.
Cool storage will always slow down any early growth on the plant, because like you said, sticking the stem up out of the ground means that that is exposed to light, and you could start getting some growth on those tubers. You don't want them to grow until next spring, right?
Kept dark. Sorry to interrupt. kept it dark and insulated on top,
mm-hmm.
on the outside. Mm-hmm. Would have a better chance for recovery in the spring so that it wouldn't be dried up again.
Yeah, well, you know what the drying up is all about? It's because of the dry peat moss. That's where you need a little mister bottle, and as you're putting them away for the winter, you're misting the peat moss lightly so there's a little bit of moisture in it, and then sealing it all up in your cold, dark location, and then go back 6 weeks later and dig around and check. Too much moisture.
How often you add moisture to it?
Well, that's what I was going to say. You have to check. You have to check. It's going to depend on temperatures.
So you check it every month almost. Then.
Yeah, if you can, every 4 to 6 weeks. So remember, I know, but too much moisture and they'll rot, and not enough moisture and they'll shrivel up. So there's
anything better than
fine line.
Peat moss.
Well, what we love about peat moss is that it's sterile. So
what?
Sterile. So
sterile,
anything
sterile
that's
peat moss.
Anything that's
like
out
that?
Of anything out of a bag, anything out of a sealed bag is sterile.
Yes.
That's what you want to put them into. It could be potting soil, could be a peat moss, whatever. Perlite, vermiculite, anything that's completely sterile is what we put them away into.
Okay, John.
Maybe a mixture of peat moss and soil, would you
as long as it's sterile soil out of a bag.
Yes, that I might make a 50-50.
Sure, that would work. And a little bit of moisture. Good luck, John.
Okay, John, we have to move along, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much,
John. All right. Take care, and thank you for calling.
He snuck a lot of questions in there.
Did he ever?
Boy, whatever happened to one question per caller?
I don't know.
Well, where's Mr. Proctor, the patrolman?
I know.
You need a whistle.
I fell off my motorcycle there. I think what happened, I ran into the ditch. Anyway, we have to take a next little break here, Charlie.
Okay.
So a reminder, our phone lines in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Anywhere in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. And we'll deal with a couple of the emails that we've left building up there for some time, but we'll try and knock them off a few anyway in just a couple of moments here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, and a quick note to Ray, Kathy, Dawn, and Diane, who are on the line and waiting patiently. Please just hang in there. We'll get to you momentarily. First of all, a couple of emails. This from Christine in Buffalo. Dear Charlie, when I'm pulling weeds, should I shake the mud off the weeds, or am I putting weed seeds back in the ground? And where do I find red worms? When I dump my compost, do I try to save the worms and put them back in the composter? My composter's a barrel and does not sit in the ground, so the little guys have no access to the dirt. That sounds like a weird composter to me.
Right. Yeah. So she's using a barrel, an existing container of some kind to compost into, which is interesting if that's working, because it could be a challenging. Always best to have your composter designed with the bottom open in touch with the soil below.
Yep.
And the reason why is because it's a good question. It's hard to say how this would work in Buffalo. In my experience, redworms, as winter comes, they go down deep and they'll actually go below ground, below the composter for the winter and go to sleep. As spring emerges and sun shines and birds start singing, the redworms come back up. So they never die. They survive the winter in the compost and using the soil below for insulation. So whether hers would survive in a barrel, it's going to depend how much moisture, what kind of temperature. It's could turn into a little oven if the sun is shining on it, right? Like, it's hard to say. But I can tell you, if you need to find redworms in the Buffalo, New York area, I did get in touch with a good friend, Kathy, of Kathy's Crawlers, or Kathy's Composters. She's an Aurora, Newmarket-based redworm specialist, actually. And she'll ship redworms all over Canada, but not to the States. So she suggested, and I did quickly Google, if you're interested in buying redworms and you live in the USA, just a simple Google of redworm suppliers, USA, and you will come up with a number of suppliers. And it's easy to ship redworms right directly to your home address. Just quickly, the first question of should I shake the mud off the weeds when I'm pulling them out of the ground? If the weeds that you're pulling have gone not only to flower, but to seed, then I would be very careful when I'm pulling them up that I don't release any seeds from those plants on the soil where I'm pulling the weeds from. Yeah. The soil itself likely is fine to knock the soil back down to the ground. But best thing in the world is, you know, even now I'm seeing dandelions blooming, right?
Yeah.
So just break off those yellow flowers before they go to seed. And if you don't have time to dig out the plant, at least don't let them go to flower and seed.
And propagate.
Exactly. Exactly. I like that. Okay. That's very horticultural type word.
Thank you propagate. Very much. I'm most proud of myself.
You can tell you've been doing this for a while.
All right. One more email before we go back to our phone lines. This is from Cheryl. Hi, Charlie and Frank. Love your show. We have a place up in Wasaga Beach, and one of our servers, Berry Bush Trees.
Service berry.
Oh, there we are. Okay.
It's all right.
It appeared to be like mildew on the leaves this year. Mm-hmm. It is planted in front of our deck that faces west. I suspect it does not get as much sun or air as the other. Because between steps and a black chokeberry bush, actually it's supposed to be one of the three black chokeberry bushes across the edge of the deck. Oh my goodness, I'm doing an awful job of reading this.
Don't worry about it. It was supposed to be three of the same and it all got messed up, but one is a service berry.
She said, I'm concerned moving is not a full solution and wondering if I should use dormancy spray next spring to make sure it is healthy for the coming year.
Okay. Hard to know what kind of how big your deck is. Choke cherry, or she calls them chokeberry, but a choke cherry bush, proper name is aronia, is going to grow 2 to 3 meters wide and 2 to 3 meters tall. Same with serviceberry. So I hope you have a very big deck because you do not want to have these plants all crammed together. Uh-huh. Because as you're recognizing, Cheryl, you're ending up with some mildew on the serviceberry. So hopefully, in terms of the error that was made there, the serviceberry is the one in the middle. So you can remove it. I would definitely dig it out and give it a better spot. You want minimum 6 hours of direct sun every day. So it's in good, clean sun, spot and good air circulation to avoid the mildew. Some summers, we just can't help it. It's between the high humidity and, high moisture level, certainly that we've been having the last few weeks, mildews will emerge. Dormant spray, wonderful, wonderful spray, the most important spray of the entire and the whole year for any of our plants that are susceptible to fungal diseases. So sure, you could use that dormant spray this fall. You could use that dormant spray again next spring. Follow the directions on the package and recognize that dormant spray, yes, roses, crab apples, lilacs, all the plants that end up showing a little bit of powdery mildew, we can prevent the problem by using the spray at the right time.
Okay. Back to our phone lines now. Let's say hi to Ray, maybe just around the corner here in Toronto. Morning, Ray.
Hi.
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I have a supposed 4-foot-tall hydrangea standard, mm-hmm. one with the upside-down conical flowers mm-hmm. that change from white to burgundy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has a lateral 3/4-inch branch coming off the main trunk.
Mm-hmm.
I am toying with the idea of removing this branch and trying to root it to another standard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, what's your opinion?
Okay. So if
put it into a planter, forget it, or will I kill the original?
Oh, no, not at all. No, you can, if that lateral branch, and 3/4 inch is a good size branch, is throwing the aesthetic of your hydrangea, your standard hydrangea, if it's messing up the aesthetic, it's making it uneven, unbalanced, not looking good, then absolutely, yes, you should remove it. And like I say, 3/4 inch, it's been there for a number of years. So when you do your pruning away, you're going to use probably a pruning saw, and you're going to do it on a nice dry day, and it will heal up, and the mother plant will be fine. Can you root that branch?
We're in the spring.
I would hold off to the spring if you can, but you could do it either time. You could do it now or in the spring, but one or the other. But will you be able to root that big old branch? No. No, be it virtually impossible to get roots to grow from such old, what we call secondary growth, right? Mm-hmm. You can, if you want to start another standard hydrangea, but you will have to take a very, what we call tip cuttings. So it's the 6 to 7 inches on the tips of your growth that you would cut off and root to grow new plants from. But it's got to be actively growing. So that would be more like June when you would take those cuttings.
Because this is coming off now and looks like another standard. It's almost the same size blooms.
If you could just get it to root. The rooting part would be the hard part.
Even with the root oil?
It would be hard to get it to root because it is a large hardwood branch.
Oh, I see.
Roots will always grow from
hardwood cuttings with the root oil.
Right. When we do hardwood cuttings, which we do, they're at the biggest, the width of a pencil.
I see.
Not 3/4 inch. And we do those cuttings in January, February when they're completely dormant. And then under very controlled, cool, bright circumstances, we can often get them to root. But those are hardwood cuttings of vigorous plants like dogwoods and forsythia. It would be a little, you would never get, well, I mean, you could try, but I can't, let me know if you can get roots to grow on such a large branch, because that, to my mind, would be rather difficult.
Okay.
Thank you, Kathy. And let us know how you, pardon me, Ray. Thank you, Ray. I'm looking at my sheet here. Kathy is next up.
You get so excited.
I know. From Thornhill, it's Kathy, Ray, on the line right now. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just need to know how to overwinter my mandevillas and my palm trees.
Oh, my. Are they really big plants?
The mandevillas, yes.
You've had them for
5 feet.
About 5 feet. Okay, and you got one or two? Have you got a big sunny, solarium or something like that to move them into?
We usually put them upstairs in the extra bedroom and in the other bedroom.
Mm.
We face south.
Oh, good.
That's good, right?
That's great. No, well, so palms, any of these tropical plants, we spend quite a lot of money to buy them. We love them outside all summer. And if we have a good spot to overwinter them, many people do so. Two ways to do it. One is you keep these plants actively growing. So you give them a bright, sunny location in your home. Of course, the heat is on. So, you know, you're at a temperate kind of a temperature. You water as required. You visit them every day. Make sure there's no, bugs came in on them or anything like that. So you're caring for them and following them and nurturing them through the winter, then giving them a very big pruning job, not so much the palm, but certainly the mandevilla or hibiscus, any of those oleanders. We cut them right back in early March so that they're ready to go back out in the spring. However, not everybody has a beautiful sunny guest room to put the plants into. So sometimes people will put them into what we call semi-dormancy. So they'll put them into a darker, cooler location.
Okay.
And not water them with any regularity. And basically just put them down. It could be a basement. It could be a root cellar, whatever it is. And they'll stay alive, but you still will have to stay on top of, sometimes they need a bit of water, but not too much water. So a little bit of just nurturing to make sure that they survive this dormant period, and then you bring them back out and get them into some sunshine and they wake up in the spring.
Okay. And how much should I cut back the mandevillas before I bring them in?
Well, cut them back so that you can handle them.
Okay.
Remember that they're probably covered in flowers, so you hate to do that now, but you will. And when you bring them in, you're going to find you get a lot of very thin, green, long, viney growth off of them. So do whatever cutting back you want to do to make them handleable, and recognize you're going to continue to do some tidying up through November, December, but then do a hard cutting back in late February, early March.
Late February. Okay. And can they stay outside until the frost or?
Depends. They can stay out till about 1 degree, as well as they're well watered and not in a lot of wind.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So make sure they're not suffering for water when they're outside when it gets cold.
Okay.
If they are, they'll be much more susceptible to frost. But
okay.
Yeah, they're good to one. Even mandevilla is a little more tender than the palms, but,
yeah.
There's a fine line with any of those tropicals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm bringing them in as well as my hibiscus. But the hibiscus usually give me bugs, the little white flies.
And that's a challenge. Like when you bring in white fly, you're stuck with white fly. I have never been. I have not yet, or in the last 10 years, been able to eliminate white fly once it comes in.
I've
been not bringing in my hibiscus anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Kathy, it sounds like Charlie has given you a fair amount of work to get done there.
Quite the garden there, by the sounds
exactly.
of it.
Exactly. Thanks
for. Gardener.
Thanks for checking.
Well, good luck with that.
Very, very
enjoy.
Good. Keep in touch with us here in the Garden Show, okay?
Okay.
Thank you.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
Look, you're going to get some exercise.
I know. I'm so excited.
Baby.
Just a second. Here we go. Oh, there we go. Ringing the bell.
The big welcome.
Dawn in Hamilton, first time caller. Good morning, Dawn.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
I have quite a big collection of hostas in my garden in different areas around my house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, I have in the past cut them back. Now, last year, I didn't cut them back in the fall,
mm-hmm.
and they come back quite nicely. And mm-hmm. I read recently that you should let them just die off, mm-hmm. let the leaves go yellow.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to find out what exactly was your opinion on this, on hostas. Like this.
So, Dawn, this is a great question because it's happening right now. You're right. I used to do the same thing. I'd go out in the fall, I'd clean up all my hostas and my various perennials and, you know, leave it all sort of tidy before winter started. And then one fall or one autumn, I didn't have a chance to get out there. So everything got frosted and dropped to the ground. And of course, hostas look kind of like dirty Kleenex when the leaves drop
right.
to the ground.
Yes, exactly.
They're not very pretty. And yet the snow fell, the snow melted and spring started and those leaves had completely disappeared. So I saved myself hours of work. And of course, the leaves went back into the ground. Like, the moisture, the nutrient, everything that was in those leaves decomposed back into the soil where the microorganisms were fed by it. And of course, we fed the soil with the leaves. I just went, wow, that was a bonus. Like, I am a lazy gardener. Give me a chance to not have to go out and do some work. I'm a happy person. So if you can put up with that dirty Kleenex look for a week or two, do it. I would not rush out and cut them all down if you don't have to.
Okay, that's great. That's great news because, yes, it is a lot of work. Cut them back in the fall, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And it sounds like I need to come visit you to see if you want to share some of those hostas with me. I've got some big gardens.
Yeah, you're welcome to them because I have a lot.
That sounds like it.
Very good, Don.
Thanks for calling,
Don. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much for the advice.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you. Take care of Hamilton for us. Let's see, what's our timing here? Okay, we've got time for another call here before we take our next break here. Diane in Toronto. Good morning, Diane.
Hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I have a cool beans crepe myrtle. The tag indicates it's a zone 6.
Mm-hmm.
I purchased it last year, put it in a pot, and then in the winter, over winter, I put it in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, should I put it in the garage? Should I leave it in the ground? I've had some research I've done that said it's a zone 7.
Mm-hmm.
This is a cool bean, so apparently it's more...
a little more hardy than most.
Hardy, yeah.
Okay, so when you put it in the garage last year, so it came through fine by the sounds of it.
It did, yes. Yes, it was perfect.
Yeah, I'm just double-checking here because I'm not positive what I would do with that one.
Yeah.
And you're in Toronto, so, I mean,
I am.
You technically are gardening in Zone 6, right?
Yeah, I'm closer to the beaches. Like,
oh, yeah, so that's even gentler.
Milder. Not that far north.
Hmm. Yeah, being the closer you are to the lake,
mm-hmm.
the more tempered your climate is.
Mm-hmm.
So your winters aren't as cold and your summers aren't as hot when you're close to a large body of water.
Yeah.
So, for example, where I now live in Prince Edward County, we haven't even had a frost yet. Like, I've got geraniums all perky and, you know, I cut down my tomatoes just to get... because I was tired of looking at them,
right.
but they haven't been frosted. So it's interesting because I know where I used to live in Richmond Hill, everything's, you know, baked for sure now.
I'm probably 5 kilometers from the lake.
Yeah. So how big is this plant? Like you're saying...
It's small, actually. It's like a foot only.
Okay.
It's still young.
No, sorry. Here I'm opening
but,
up.
I have it planted closer to the sidewalk in the road area.
Right. So you know
shelter,
what? Just
but I do provide protection in the winter for that corner, so the salt and all that doesn't get into the garden.
Hmm. Yeah. So it's never going to get very big. It is a fairly small plant, and it's a fairly slow growing plant.
Okay.
It is. It's great in terms of being tolerant of drought and attractive to bees and butterflies. So a lovely plant that way.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, according to Blue Sky Nursery, which is a pretty smart nursery in our neighborhood, it is hardy to -23 degrees. Celsius.
Okay.
So we have had winters in Toronto where it got to mm-hmm. below -23 Celsius overnight. Sometimes it's the duration of the cold that can kill things as well.
Right.
So it's one, I mean, I guess you could look forward at some of the winter forecasts. Everything I'm hearing, they're talking about a milder winter than average.
Right.
So temperature wise, but more snow than average, maybe because of all this mild, we'll get lake effect snow perhaps.
Right.
And snow is great, right? Snow is an excellent insulator
sure,
on our garden
yeah.
plants.
What if I put a cone over it, like a large styrofoam?
Yeah, they are a bit tricky, those cones. They do trap certainly cold air, but they also trap, you know, they insulate. It's like an upside down cooler, right? A beer cooler.
Right.
But the challenge with those in the spring is that things start to warm up and there's a lot of moisture up underneath, and many plants will actually just turn to mush if you're too slow getting those cones off.
Okay.
I'd be more inclined, you got through the first winter, so it's in a pot still or it's in the ground?
No, it's in the ground. I planted it in the spring in the ground.
Okay, so last year it was in a pot and went
yep.
in the... So you know what? I would get some soil, treat it like a rose. So
okay.
mound some soil, like hill it in the... Once it gets cold, once we get a hard frost, 9 to 10 inches of just earth around the base of the plant. And if you are going to, you know, if it's a salt issue and you need to put a little bit of burlap or something to protect from salt or people, certainly
okay.
no issues with deer and deers and... Deer yep. and rabbit will not eat that plant, which
right.
is a good thing. And yeah, let it see how it goes.
Like I have mulch. Can mm-hmm. I put the mulch
yeah.
into the earth?
Yeah, as long as it's a fairly well composted mulch. It's not big
yes,
chunky mulch.
Yeah, it's
that'll...
It's really fine mulch.
Good.
I also sent an email, so you can just disregard it.
Oh, okay.
I did that about 3 weeks ago.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, thank
you
very much for
that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your help.
Our pleasure. Thank you for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
And we are up to our next break here. In fact, a little overtime. So
got
to take a little bit of a break and come back and deal with some more phone calls and maybe squeeze in another email or two here as you listen in to The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Frank, the sous chef of the garden, just saying to Sheila, Marina, and Jane, hang tight. We're coming back at you on the phone lines. One more email to deal with. This from William Hill in Pickering. Hi, Charlie and the whole team. Over the next few weeks, I'd like to take quite a few geranium cuttings from a variety of plants. My previous attempts have had various success rates. This year, I'm thinking of leaving the cuttings and the mother plants outside until approaching frost dates rather than bringing them indoor under light. I've been using White Rose four-tier stand, each tier with four fluorescent grow bulbs. Thank you in advance for your comments. Bill from Pickering.
Mm-hmm. Good question, Bill. And thank you for being a White Rose supporter back in the day. I, too, was growing, using some of the White Rose fixtures back at my last home. So notice the date on this email. Bill sent this in mid-September, so perhaps he's already moved forward and made some decisions. But here's the bottom line. The mother plants, the geraniums mm-hmm. that you have outside, if they're in pots, they're not that hard to bring indoors after you've given them a good soap and water wash and then a rinse, and bring in the mother plants, and you can cut them back at any point you want to propagate them for next spring. Or your mother plants might be in the ground. If they're in the ground, do not even attempt to dig them up. It's way too much work. Instead, take your cuttings from the mother plant now. I'm assuming it hasn't frosted where you are. These are tip cuttings. Remove the flowers, because you probably have flowers on those tips. So get rid of the flowers. 4 to 6 inch green stem with green leaf cuttings. Mm-hmm. Remove the leaves on the lower portion of that stem so that you've exposed the nodes where those leaves came from. Make sure you've got got some rooting hormone, typically called stim root. Number one, it is a rooting hormone, naturally occurring rooting hormone that will encourage roots quickly. You dip your cuttings into water. You dip your cuttings, wet cuttings, into the powder. You knock off the excess, and then you take those cuttings and you insert them into something moist. It could be moist sand, moist perlite, moist vermiculite, moist potting soil, anything moist, sometimes even just straight water. People will put geranium cuttings into straight water, and those cuttings will go onto your plant stand. And it's from there that the roots will grow. And they will grow fairly quickly. It takes a couple of weeks. Keep an eye. If they start to really shrivel up because they have no ability to absorb water,
right,
they have no roots yet, you will often will put a little plastic wrap over top or a little hood. It's also known as a cloche. Just something that makes like a mini kind of a greenhouse idea, keeping that moisture around the plants until they grow roots. As soon as they've got some roots, get them potted up into little small pots and just nurture them through the winter. You're going to probably take cuttings from those cuttings by January, February. So before you know it, you've opened your own geranium nursery.
Good luck with all of that, Bill. Okay, back to our phone lines. There's Sheila patiently waiting in Etobicoke. Good morning, Sheila.
Morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
I'm calling with regard to my prized Japanese maple.
Mm-hmm.
I've had, I don't know, this summer has been very, very hot, and the leaves, they're very
crispy,
feathery kind. I don't know the name of that.
Oh, the fringe,
type.
Yep.
But they've, like, crust on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing is that the inside branches have all died off.
Mm-hmm.
And I put, you know, they were so brittle, so they came off very readily.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a big hole there.
Mm. Right. So is this a...
Will it grow back?
Is this a weeping variety or an upright?
Yes, it is the weeping.
Okay. And so it got really, really dense. And it's how many years have you had it? A long time, obviously.
Now, close to 40 plus years.
Wow.
But it's such a beautiful specimen.
Right. So have you...
And we burlap it every winter just to protect it.
Okay. You may not need to burlap it. What direction does it face?
It's west, southwest.
Hmm.
It gets a fair amount of sun.
Yeah, I know. So I'm just wondering if you need to burlap it. I probably
I don't know.
Wouldn't.
I guess we babied it.
Yeah, the first year or two, and of course, 44 years ago, that was a very treasured, unusual plant.
Yeah.
Super exotic.
Paid a lot of money then when we couldn't afford it.
I bet. And now they're much more common, right? But 40 years ago, they were hard to find.
Yeah.
So, you know, good for you, which is why you protected it every winter for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what I would do if it was my Japanese maple is I wouldn't burlap it. But next spring, I would get down on my hands and knees with my very sharp pruners and or loppers. I would not only clean out anything that's dead on the plant, I would clean the ground below because, you know, there's going to be debris, leaves, etc.
Yeah.
I'd make sure that that soil is not old and tired 44 years later. So I'd be adding some compost, getting some organic matter into the soil around the plant.
Okay.
And I'd look very closely at thinning out some of the growth because I bet you it's extremely dense, and it needs to, to rejuvenate that plant, it needs to be opened up, it needs to be cut back, it needs some pruning, and this would all happen. I would be doing it probably in March or April, because you can see then what's alive and what's dead. Like, live growth has got is shiny bark, the dead is a totally different color. It's brown or black or whatever.
Yeah,
so,
it just sort of snaps.
Yeah, well, and don't snap it, though. You cut it with nice, sharp pruners, because it's very hard on plants to have ragged they don't heal well. So, a pruner will make a nice clean cut, and if the plant is
healthy... And a diagonal
healthy,
cut, is that...
Not necessarily. You follow your branch color, really, and it could be whatever angle. But, I mean, a 44-year-old plant is not a young plant.
No, it isn't.
And just like people... Plants get old, so it doesn't have that same vigor that it had.
Don't say that.
I know, but we say it's had too many birthdays, so it's not able to heal its wounds quite as well as a young one can. So just keep that in mind when you're working with this plant.
Okay. Now in the spring, you know, all the foliage falls to the base of the thing. Would that hurt it? Because I've just let it be there.
No, you're going to clean that all up.
Use as compost.
Yep. Yeah. Put it in the compost, but add some fresh compost
at the
to
bottom,
the soil.
I just leave it there.
But don't. pull it out. Get a rake and pull it out. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Sheila.
Calling.
We have to kind of move along here. We are next break and then a couple of other callers, Marina and Jane, hanging on the line there. Stay with us here on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie and I are galloping off to Guelph to say hi to Marissa. Yeah, hi, good morning.
Oh, hi, good morning. Yes, I have some beautiful orange poppies in a raised flower bed.
Mm.
And they are close to a little beautiful rose bush.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, the rose bush really doesn't come into its own until after the poppies have finished blooming.
Mm-hmm.
And now the poppies, well, they have that second growth,
mm-hmm.
and they're starting to overtake that little rose bush
right.
again. I'm thinking of digging it up and putting it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good idea?
Well, somebody's going to have to give there. So you're either going to have to say, I'm going to have fewer poppies and, you know, shrink that collection that you've got, or move the rose, but make sure you're moving the rose into a very, very sunny, preferably good air circulation location.
Okay.
Sound good? Thank you, Marissa.
Okay, Marissa, thank you. Off to Chatham now. There's Jane on the line. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Excellent. What's
Love
going on?
Seeing the pictures of your new home on Facebook.
Oh, thank you.
That was laying the grass. Keep us posted.
No, I've got. You're right. I've been a little bit busy and not posting as much as I should. My brother was yelling at me too.
Yeah. I'm calling about a Japanese maple also.
Mm-hmm.
This has happened with over the last month, in that all the ends are turning a pinky white. Almost like they've been hit by frost or maybe sunburned.
The leaves or the tips of the stems?
No, the leaves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know what the answer to that is? At this time of year, never, ever, ever worry about the state of leaves on deciduous plants. Because these leaves are going to fall in the next week or two, and next year's a whole new year. This was a very tough year for Japanese maples in general because of the high heat and the lack of moisture.
Yeah.
It was a great year for tomatoes and sunflowers and, you know, cannabis mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of people that were growing plants that love that environment, but not Japanese maples. So don't worry. Next year's a whole new year. Keep that organic matter coming around your Japanese maples. It will help with moisture retention. It'll help with a slow release of nutrients to these plants and will help them get through tough, hot, droughty situations like particularly July and early September was. All right.
Okay. So the organic matter I put down in the spring?
Yeah. Spring or fall. Every single year.
Okay.
Okay.
Alrighty, I'll see how it looks like that spring.
Excellent. I think you'll find it'll look gorgeous. And then you'll do some cleaning up, some pruning, you know, tidying up, admire it, talk to that plant. It will respond.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Jane.
Thank you very much, Jane. From Chatham, that brought me back on a little memory trip. That was where I first started to work in radio at CFCO.
And you were like 14 years
Chatham.
Old, weren't you?
Well, not quite. I was 17.
Oh, 17. Yeah, was so 17, much more mature
yeah.
than 14.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And stayed at Mom and Pop Cartier's
boarding
house.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
$15 a week.
Wow, I can't believe you remember that.
I mean, $38.50 a week.
That was room and board, $15
a
week.
Yeah.
My.
Oh, some of the stories.
Yes, indeed. Have you ever written your memoirs, Frank? I think it's time.
Oh,
or dictate
dear.
Them or something.
I'm wondering how many I could really share. That's the problem.
Oh, good point.
I remember.
There'd be lawsuits, right?
Well, yeah. Okay, I guess I haven't got time to ruminate any more on that, except to say there have been some excellent questions here this
there
morning.
There have.
Super.
I was saying to you, though, that emails are a little more controllable than our callers. We had some people run away with a lot of questions there, so I guess we'll just have to be, like, more on the ball next week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Try and limit your time, as it were.
Well, or, like, let's get the question out and
the
that's
gong.
It.
The gong show.
Ah, it's an idea.
Bong.
Cut them off.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound very nice.
No, that's not very nice at all.
We can use some of the techniques they were using on the presidential debates.
Oh, Lord.
Weren't those working well?
Anyway, enough of that.
Exactly. So I'm hearing some cars revving their engines just behind you. So I see we have the gentleman with the car show here. There they are.
Dave's
there.
Corner Garage.
It's, it's the Harleys, actually. It looks like he's on a Harley. He's not in any car.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Charlie.
And thank you, Carlos. Couldn't do any of this without your help. And thanks to all our great callers. The one thing is try and keep it to one question per caller for next week.
Okay.
And we will see you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.